live from the Poly Market Studio in L.A. It's the Young Turks. All right, Young Turks, Jake Uger, Anna Kasparian. Anna, you know you love it.
Wait, what do I love?
The power panel and the shenanigans.
Definitely do not love the shenanigans. Okay, maybe a little bit. Maybe a little bit.
I'm not buying it. Okay. Speaking of shenanigans, programming knows Common Room filled with shenanigans tonight on Twitch. Twitch.tv. It's not .com. It's twitch.tv/TYT. Brett Ehrlich. Wait a minute. Anna Kasparian. I knew you liked shenanigans. I knew it. J.R. Jackson. No, sorry. J.R. was on the last episode.
Damn.
Melissa Bernardino. Sorry. Well, that's fun. And Sloan Hughes. I say it's fun because I'm like, wait a minute. Alyssa's our intern. She is.
Yeah.
Sloan Hughes from Funny or Die. How's that for fun? All right. 9 p.m. Eastern tonight. Okay. Everybody check that out. Speaking of things to check out, we got post game after this show. And we're going to have excellent stories there, including AOC's takedown of Loco Yoho. But after the post game is happy half hour. Sorry, it's 2020. We only have half an hour of happiness. The show was started earlier. Anyways, so Brett has drinks with musical genius and longtime TYT viewer, Nick Marzock. Okay. He composed music for Seth MacFarlane's American Dad. All right. So nothing but fun for you guys, slash, as usual, disastrous news mixed in. Welcome to Young Turks. Welcome to 2020. All right. Caspis, go.
Okay.
Is the nickname for the house Caspis?
Caspis? No, sure, whatever. It's Caspis? Fine. I'll take it.
Is it Caspis? You and Christian?
Oh, Caspis. Yes, yes. All right, I got to get serious now because we're about to do disastrous news. So I got to get rid of, I got to compose myself. All right, let's do it. Serious. So, all right. So the coronavirus spread the coronavirus spread has been so severe in South Texas that the health authority for the Starr County Hospital, Memorial Hospital, has made clear that they need to form essentially what's a death panel in order to make decisions about which type of patients they bring in for the ICUs and which ones they need to turn away if they're not healthy enough, or if they have no potential to survive if they receive treatment from the hospital. So according to Border Report, Starr County Health Authority, Dr. Jose Vasquez, said that Starr County Memorial Hospital, the county's only hospital, implemented what they're referring to as an ethics committee and a triage committee to review all coronavirus patients as they come in to determine what type of life-saving equipment and treatment they would likely require and whether they would likely survive. Those deemed too fragile or sick or elderly will be advised to go home to loved ones. So this is disastrous, and this really could have been avoided if the state of Texas didn't open prematurely and the health experts in the area make clear that they believe that opening up Texas prematurely contributed to the rapid spread of this virus. To give you more details, the same report indicates that Starr County has an eight-bed COVID-19 unit at its hospital. But currently, there are 28 patients with three on ventilators and life support, including one in the emergency room. Vasquez said physicians will be using a mass casualty treatment plan devised by physicians in North Texas to determine who gets treatment and who does not. So I'm going to read you a few quotes from him, and then I want to talk about the reality of death panels, because we heard about them quite a bit during the Obama administration, and that didn't really turn out to be the case. But now that we actually do have death panels, radio silence from the right wing. Vasquez says there's nowhere to put these patients. The whole state of Texas and neighboring states have no ICU beds to spare for us. We are going to have these committees reviewing each case, end-of-life decisions and hospice decisions and comfort care situation for all those patients who most certainly do not have any hope of improving. We believe they will be better taken care of in the love of their own family and home rather than thousands of miles away dying alone. So the argument here is, well, if they're not going to make it, you know, we're not going to bring them into the hospital. Basically, I mean, he doesn't say it as overtly, but the message here is we have to make tough decisions about who we bring in and who we reject. And the individuals we reject are going to be the ones that we deem less likely to survive. And they're likely to die in their home surrounded by their loved ones. Okay. This is devastating.
No. He said it as overtly as any person could possibly say it. They're making decisions about who lives, who dies. Now, I want to be super clear about this. Do not hold it against him, the doctors, the hospital there. They only have eight beds. What are they going to do? Put people on the floor? So then we got to figure out as a society, what do we want to do? Do we want to airlift them to another hospital? Do we want to send them home? Let's make these decisions, because it's an act of omission. It's just the same as one of commission. So if we say, well, we're not going to make a decision, we're just going to let the locals make the decision. Either way, that decision is being made and someone is being sent home to die. So that's a literal death panel. Now, it's not like what the right wing demagogued about during the Obama days. Well, there's two big differences. One, the first difference is that was a lie based on absolutely nothing, totally made up by Sarah Palin, backed up by zero, zilch, nothing, nada. Okay, we told you the legitimate problems with the Affordable Care Act. That was not one of them. So they pretended to care about life, as they often do. Oh, we're the pro-life party, right? So that was a huge portion of it. But here, there's another difference. It's by nature of this disease that when it flares up, the hospitals get overloaded. And so we've got to make these decisions. Now, the best way to have avoided it was to do more testing, tracing, masks, social distancing. But the moron in chief told you not to do that for a long, long time. And finally, 4, 5, 6 months into this pandemic, he finally put on a mask. And then the media was like, oh, wow, he's turned a corner. After 148,000 dead, he turned a corner. After death panels in Texas, he turned a corner. That corner was turned way too late. But yeah. So guys, going forward, we got to help those people and we got to figure out what we're doing here. One more thing I want to explain there. When they say, oh, okay, we're going to send them home instead of to somewhere 1,000 miles away to die in a hospital alone. But remember, they're dying because of coronavirus. So if you're sending them home to drive back hundreds of miles in Texas to their family, isn't their family going to get sick? There's a reason why we can't see our family as they're about to die. And that's one of the most gut-wrenching parts of coronavirus, that the folks who die alone. So what are we doing sending them back into their families? That none of this makes any sense. We got to go, but there is no leadership. There's no leadership in Texas, and there's no leadership in the White House.
So I see this as an issue with various problems coming together to create a disaster. So the first thing that needs to be mentioned, I've already mentioned it briefly in the beginning of the story, is that Texas did open prematurely, right? And on top of that, There was really no serious reception toward the social distancing guidelines. So they open early, they don't follow the social distancing guidelines. And then the third component really is the fact that we have an entire profit motive behind our healthcare system, which is part of the reason why we don't have enough beds in the middle of this pandemic. It is not in a capitalist society where hospitals have a profit motive. Does it make sense to have all these beds that usually sit empty and, you know, take up room, take up costs? No, I mean, it just doesn't make sense, right? So hospitals were already ill-prepared to deal with this pandemic to begin with, which is why in the beginning of the pandemic, we would hear from people like Dr. Anthony Fauci say, look, our hospitals are going to get overwhelmed quickly unless we take action now. And in the very beginning, when we had the shutdowns, which, by the way, were still a little too late, but people seem to take it seriously. I mean, how long did those shutdowns last before you have Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick from the state of Texas argue that we need to open right away? You know, I'm an older individual and I would certainly like to go back to work, which is complete BS. We all know that. We prove that to you guys on the show. It's just every day we get more and more confirmation of something that we've already suspected, which is the very right wingers who claimed that they cared so much about life, who cared so much about fetuses and zygotes because they considered that life from the moment of conception, actually don't care about life at all and would not do what it takes in order to ensure that as many people survive during this pandemic as possible. And Jenks, since you mentioned Sarah Palin, we do have one video. I believe this is from 2013 when she was on Fox News fear-mongering about so-called death panels. Let's take a quick look at that.
Of course, there are death panels in there. But the important thing to remember is that's just one aspect of this atrocious, unaffordable, cumbersome, burdensome, evil policy of Obama's, and that is Obamacare.
Yeah, I don't really hear much from Sarah Palin these days about actual death panels that are being implemented right now because of the lack of leadership and how ill-prepared this country has been when it comes to the pandemic.
Yeah, look, guys, I know I'm beating a very hobbled horse, if not a dead one. But when the right wing makes up something, the media covers it like it's 50-50. Even if they say that it's not true, and in a lot of cases, to be fair to them on the death panels, they did say that. It just gets announced so much. It gets, quote unquote, debated so much that at least a third of the country winds up believing that it's true. Now, when there's actual death panels, sound of silence. Because Republicans don't want to talk about it because they're the ones who caused it. And the Democrats don't talk about it because they're incompetent. So the media goes, what do you want me to do? Actually be the media? No. I'll report it in some, you know, small paper in the middle of Texas, and then I'm done with it. No, no politician brought it up. And what do you want a poor little stenographer like me to make a big deal out of it? That's the job of the press, to hold the powerful accountable. And so, for God's sake, get in the game. And so, to me, these are super hard decisions. And somebody's got to make them. Otherwise, people are going to die no matter what, right? But right now, it's at least as far as the Republicans are concerned, Anna's 1,000,000,000% right. All those pro-lifers couldn't care less. Some of them, when they realize it affects them, and we're going to talk about this later in the show, a teacher in Oklahoma flips out and goes, oh my God, this is a death sentence for me if I go back in. I've got pre-existing conditions, etc. So now she's changed her mind. But if it doesn't affect them, they're like, oh, life? Who cares? So that's what's happening in Texas, and that's the reality.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the upcoming stimulus bill, because Elon Musk, of all people, has some thoughts and he wanted to share them with us this morning. I also have thoughts. So Elon Musk has some strong feelings about whether Congress should pass another stimulus bill in order to provide economic relief to both companies and to average Americans. And so through a Twitter thread, he argued that another government stimulus package is not in the best interests of the people, in my opinion. Oh, fascinating. Okay, that's great. So he continues, I want to be fair. I'm going to give you all of the tweets in this thread so all of the Elon Musk stans don't have a temper tantrum with me. He also says, as a reminder, I'm in favor of universal basic income. Goal of government should be to maximize the happiness of the people. Giving each person money allows them to decide what meets their needs rather than the blunt tool of legislation, which creates self-serving special interests. He also says these are jammed to gills with special interest earmarks. It's fascinating that he's complaining about that. And he also says if we do a stimulus at all, it should just be direct payments to consumers. Now, look, this is a small thing, but I have to mention that his use of the word consumers is important when you want to understand why people like him and why a lot of these Silicon Valley CEOs love the idea of universal basic income, because they see the working class as consumers. And in order for them to stay afloat, consumers need money. But at the same time, they often also advocate for gutting the social safety net, right? So Medicaid, for instance, or Social Security. And they want to simplify everything by maybe handing everybody $1,000 a month or whatever the number is, with the hope that that'll keep people satisfied enough so they don't riot. But anyway, let me tell you why I have a problem with this argument, because the way that he has presented it might seem awesome on the surface, but in reality, these stimulus bills aren't just about giving money to corporations or giving money to average citizens. We were clear in our criticisms about previous stimulus bills. I did not like the fact that there was a lack of transparency when it came to the $500 billion that Steve Mnuchin could hand out to all his corporate buddies. I do not agree with the Federal Reserve printing money and bailing out big banks who then turn around and refuse refinancing to average Americans who are looking to tap into lower interest rates. So there's a lot of criticism to go around. But the stimulus bill actually provides funding for all sorts of things that we desperately need, including funding for hospitals, funding for desperately needed PPE for these hospitals. Even the Republican draft for the upcoming stimulus bill provided some funding for mental health care and suicide prevention, which is incredibly important right now, considering how many people are suffering from anxiety, depression, and, you know, people have committed suicide in the middle of this pandemic. It's a serious problem. Also, it includes assistance for small businesses, or at least it's supposed to include relief for small businesses. And that's important because there are people who have spent their entire lives building their small business, whether it's a hair salon or a restaurant, and they have been negatively impacted by this, and they're likely to lose everything unless Congress acts. So to just simply say, like, I don't agree with the stimulus bill, I think it's all about earmarks, I think is ridiculous, because that's not really the case. But if you have nuanced criticisms, I would love to hear it. Unfortunately, that's not what we're getting from Elon Musk. Cenk, I have to keep going. Let me finish my point.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
We're going to get to his hypocrisy in a second, but I just want to just point out some things ideologically. So the folks who say small government is what we need, really? I mean, that's so unsophisticated. Small government for what? What's the project? So if you say, you know who's for small government? Progressives who want to defund the police, right? That is smaller government. Progressives are in favor of smaller government because we don't want endless wars in the Middle East or all over the world. What is the job at hand? So if we're trying to rebuild the energy infrastructure of this country, then we need a big government. Or when Eisenhower, both in World War II and building the highway system in this country, needed big government. Sometimes you need big government, sometimes you need small government. And what you always need is a brain to figure out which is which. So these simplistic ways of looking at it are unsophisticated, to say the least. And it's disappointing to see Elon Musk, who's very smart in other ways, be this politically obtuse, let alone hypocritical. So when he says in that tweet, legislation is a blunt instrument, universal basic income would also need to be legislation. So that doesn't make any sense at all. The question is, what should be in the legislation? So are we concerned about special interests? There's literally no one in the country who's more worried about special interests than we are. I started a whole pack called Wolfpack to get money out of politics because these guys are picking us apart and all the politicians serve them. But that doesn't mean you should never pass any legislation to help Americans. Please, for God's sake, use your brain. Now let's get to his hypocrisy.
So, of course, he's a hypocrite because he's received so much in government stimulus in order to launch his businesses, his multiple businesses. But there was a story out of Buffalo, New York that really caught my attention. I want to share the details of it with you. It was written in 2019. And the headline is, Tesla's Buffalo plant gets $884 million write-down. Huh, what does that mean? Well, it turns out that the state of New York actually offered Tesla a giant amount of money to build its plant. And then later, that plant was appraised. And let me give you the details on what the appraisal indicated. New York State spent $958.6 million to build Tesla's solar panel factory in South Buffalo and buy a big chunk of the equipment inside. Now, auditors are saying the building and all that equipment is worth just under $75 million, or just 8% of what the state put into the Riverbend factory. But we're not done. It gets worse. In a series of contract revisions, the state dropped the provision included in earlier agreements that mandated the creation of another 1,440 jobs at suppliers and service providers, effectively cutting the job impact from the state's $959 million investment in half. Hopes that the project would spur the creation of a solar energy research hub in Buffalo and Rochester also failed to pan out. The agreement also failed to set any type of pay standards for the River Bend jobs. For nearly $1 billion in taxpayer subsidies, it certainly would have been reasonable for the state to insist that the factory's jobs pay well, maybe mandating that 80% of the positions pay at least 33% above the area's median wage, or around $59,000 a year. Instead, Tesla's entry-level wage is around $16 an hour, or around $33,000 a year. Oof, sounds like a great investment. Good job, state of New York. I mean, just absolute garbage. I have no interest hearing any political commentary from people like Elon Musk, people who have milked the system for their own advantage, and then they turn around in a moment of crisis when people need economic relief to argue that maybe a stimulus bill doesn't make any sense. Maybe we can give the monkeys some peanuts and they'll shut up and they won't complain anymore. You know, because we need consumers, of course. Yeah. It's just, I have more, but go ahead, Cenk.
So, look, we did a fun poll on another TYT show. Elon Musk, yes or no? You can vote at tytpolls.com/polls/Elon, or you do just slash polls and you'll get all of them. There they are. So right now, no is winning 70-30. Okay, I actually voted yes. And so I think Elon Musk is a complicated, interesting character. I think that too many people buttonhole him. And so I think he's wrong about this. And I want to be clear. So New York made a major mistake in giving $1 billion to that project. And it was money that was wasted. So that's big government that didn't work. But the federal government gave less money to Tesla, but at a time that they desperately needed it in 2008. And that did work. So at that time, they'd given Tesla $465 million. And Tesla paid that loan back. The government made interest on it. And it wound up helping create a car company that is getting off of fossil fuels. Don't forget.
Isn't that what the stimulus bill is? Isn't that what the stimulus bill would want to do with small businesses? They're small business loans, right?
Yes.
And so for him to turn around and say, like, oh, too many earmarks. Yeah, you're all about earmarks. Your entire life is built on earmarks. Yeah, like, come on.
Anna, I'm getting to that. So,
okay.
On the issue of subsidies and earmarks for special interests, Elon Musk, who is a complicated and interesting person, deserves a tall glass of shut-up juice. After taking billions of dollars in subsidies, you don't get to talk about subsidies when it goes to other people. Now, I mean, if you wanted to give full context in that tweet and say, oh, by the way, I've taken $1 billion from New York, I've taken $500 million from the federal government, I paid some of it back, I didn't, others were a disaster. Sorry, taxpayers, I totally screwed you on that. I mean, I can't begin to tell you how much I screwed you on that. Okay, but in this case, I think these particular subsidies are wrong. Well, that's an interesting nuanced position that he would have. Saying, I'm against subsidies, man. I don't like legislation. Proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that you could be really smart in some areas and a total moron in others.
And then one final thing. Elon Musk's businesses have received a total of $4.9 billion in government subsidies. So, Cenk, you mentioned the $465 million that Tesla received from the Obama administration in 2009. But overall, Elon Musk's growing empire is fueled by $4.9 billion in government subsidies. I think that's a great place to leave this story. We got to take a break.
Hold on, one more thing. So, look, in the post game, I want to give you guys even more context because the federal government actually spent a lot of money on promoting green energy. Did it work? I'm going to give you the numbers. The numbers are actually really interesting and a little surprising. So I was surprised by them. So the post games for the members, tyt.com/join, or if you're watching on YouTube, you can just hit the join button underneath. Make sure you get at least a $4.99 level so you can get the post games, because that's a really important lesson for all of us to learn. It's not just about Elon Musk. It's about what the government can and can't do. So we'll talk about it for the members.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, you must unlearn what you have learned. And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
I'm back on the Young Turks, Cenk and Anna with you guys. Look, I'm going to be out next week, so the show, our Twitch show between me and Uyghur is next week going to be between me and Ehrlich, which just really honestly does not sound as good. Okay, but to be fair to Brett, he does have a fantastic superstar guest that he got that I'm a little jealous of. It's the legendary Queen of Salt from House Caspas, Anna Kasparian. So look, these conversations are fantastic because they last an hour. They're personal. You get to find out things that you never found out about them, including how they grew up, etc. So check that out next Thursday at 8 o'clock Eastern on twitch.tv/TYT. Okay, and if you're a member on Twitch, you get those shows whenever you want, not just when they're live, including the Young Turks. Okay, so I want to see how we're doing in terms of the thermometer. We're trying to keep healthy and sustainable. 123,344. On the other hand, we only have about a week left before July ends. I'm usually the optimistic one, but on this one, I'm a little pessimistic that we're going to hit 200. I had somebody inside the company say, no, I think we're about to have our finest hour. I was like, I like that kind of talk. TYT.com/go. Let me give you guys some really important messages from you all, from the members.
on TYT.com. Okay, so Madeline says, leading with the most depressing news on a Friday. Ugh, my stomach literally turned, and I'm so sorry for all those people who are being considered for death in Texas because of the lack of responsible leadership. Victor says, I live in South Texas, Hidalgo County to be exact. This story is real, I can confirm. So that's really interesting. Mondo Libre says, forget herd immunity, Texas is culling the herd. Lieutenant Mac McGee says, about a story we did yesterday. It's too long, I can't read the whole thing, but I'll just read the beginning. He says, Anna and Jenk, I looked into it as best I could today. I can tell you with firsthand knowledge that the leadership at Wells Fargo is taking unwanted forbearance issues very seriously. I can affirm that it was not intentional, and all the way down at the branch level, employees are proactively contacting people who might have been affected and are not yet aware. So he works at Wells Fargo, and that's his perspective, and I'm glad that he shared it. I want to share all of our perspectives, and he's a great Young Turks member, so keep that in mind, everybody. Last things are from YouTube Super Chat. Brad Gosser randomly says happy birthday. To who, I'm not sure, but it is Hassan Piker's birthday, so wish him a happy birthday. We're on Twitch, so is he, so bless his heart. And lastly, Santiago Rodriguez writes in, Colombian from Barcelona, we need TYT worldwide. Hear, hear, brother.
Oh, Barcelona sounds so good right now.
Oh, I know. And did
just had a fantasy about Barcelona.
We did. Oh, let's get the. I can't wait for coronavirus to be over. Could you imagine if we did a TYD trip to Barcelona?
No, I can't imagine it because it's never going to happen.
Are you kidding me? We're doing TYT.com/go. Who's going anywhere, little Barcelona? Okay. Anyway, all right, Casper, go ahead.
All right. Donald Trump continues to threaten to send federal agents and troops to democratically led cities across the country. In fact, here he is on Sean Hannity's Fox News show making that argument.
We want to go in and help the cities. We want to help Chicago. We want to help all of them. Detroit's having problems. They're a very good police chief in Detroit, but they have problems. We'll go into all of the cities, any of the cities. We're ready. We'll put in 50,000, 60,000 people that really know what they're doing, and they're strong, they're tough, and we could solve these problems so fast. But as you know, we have to be invited in.
Mr. President, I want to ask you about that.
We're going to have to do something that's much stronger than being invited in.
Now, while the elected officials in Portland, for instance, or some of these cities claim that they absolutely do not want federal agents to be involved, unfortunately, they're is some indication that some of them have asked for help, but more importantly, there's definitely evidence indicating that local police unions have been asking for help from the federal government. And help is definitely a euphemism here, considering the brutality that we've seen in some of these videos featuring these federal agents, attacking these protesters. Now, the local police unions have asked for help in so many different cities that we weren't even previously aware of yet. And thanks to the excellent reporting by Ken Klippenstein from The Nation, we now know just how severe this problem really is. So he writes in The Nation that CBP's support to local law enforcement has extended far beyond its controversial Portland deployment and includes not just thousands of personnel, but also drones and dozens of other aircraft. And that's according to a CBP document that was obtained exclusively by The Nation. So the draft of the agency's answers to questions posed to them by Senator Kamala Harris on June 5th details the assets that CBP deployed in response to requests for assistance from local law enforcement agencies across the country. So many local law enforcement agencies requested support that, according to the document, CBP was not aware of any state or local entities that explicitly declined assistance. The assistance includes a broad array of services like aerial surveillance, crowd control, unmarked vehicles, and plainclothes surveillance. Several requests involve specialized tactical units like CBP's Amphibious Ravine Force. So, military grade stuff used against civilians who are practicing their constitutionally protected right to protest. And this has been the case in places like New York. The New York PD requested this, Chicago PD, Miami PD, Philadelphia PD, San Diego PD, and DC's Metropolitan PD, just to name a few.
Yeah, well, look, there's two different things here. In terms of the equipment, yes, all the police departments are going to request it, even in the most progressive cities. Why? They love toys. Oh my God, I get to play soldier. I'm now G.I. Joe, so fun. No, it's not fun to roll a tank through an American city. No, it's not fun to use a lot of these military equipment as an occupying force in the cities you're supposed to protect and serve. Now, on the issue of sending the federal forces, here we go again with the moron in chief. So when he's talking to Sean Hannity, he says, well, you know, maybe we send in 50 to 60,000. And a little bit later in the interview, he says, maybe we send in 55 or 75,000. Did you do any homework? I mean, you know the answer. Of course he didn't. Do you know how many federal forces there are at the DHS? Of course he didn't do that homework. And did you put even 1 second of thought into it to know whether it should be 50, 55, 65, or 75,000, which are all vastly different numbers? Now, you want to know how many federal officers, full-time law enforcement officers DHS has? 62,000. So it'd be a challenge to send 75,000 in when there's only 62,000. So, but he doesn't care. He doesn't, it's all optics. He said, oh, I'm gonna solve it really quickly. It's gonna be so quick, you wouldn't believe it. You're right, I wouldn't believe it, because that's literally what you said in your acceptance speech at the RNC 4 years ago. You said, I'm gonna fix it so quick. There's gonna be no more violent crime and I alone can fix it. Well, what happened? In Trump's America, according to you, there's out of control crime and you had 4 years to fix it. Not only did it not happen quickly, it apparently didn't happen at all.
You know, the CBP deployed a Predator drone in Minneapolis after the George Floyd protests broke out. A Predator drone. I just think that for everyone who thinks that these foreign policy stories are boring and you don't care what's happening in Afghanistan, you don't care about the US orchestrated coups in Latin American countries, just understand that our bloated military budget, which by the way just passed with the help of Democrats in Congress, is a boomerang. Those weapons end up being used against us. And by the way, you should have, you know, some compassion, some empathy for people who don't live in the United States. It shouldn't only be about us. But we ignore these stories. You know, they don't do well in cable news. They don't even do well with independent media. And there's a price to pay for that. The fact that we've remained complicit with this type of behavior, you know, makes me upset because, again, like we're suffering the consequences, and civilians in other countries have been suffering the consequences. Finally, I want to go to the last graphic here that shows something that I suggested protesters do. I'm sure that protesters had already been doing this, but this kind of imagery is so powerful. There you have a protester holding the American flag, someone practicing his or her constitutionally protected right, and there's tear gas everywhere. There's chaos everywhere. They're met with brutal violence at the hands of federal agents, and the right wing is completely supportive of it. It's just absolutely disgusting.
And remember, we've got our Second Amendment rights in case there's government tyranny, like in this, wait, like when the federal forces came in and crushed states' rights and people are exercising their constitutional rights, tyranny like that, like right now. No, I love that tyranny. I love that tyranny. You guys are so full of crap. Every right winger out there that was said states' rights, now all of a sudden you turn around and you say, I hate states' rights. Why? Well, before the states wanted to be racist, and I love that. Now the federal government is saying they don't want to handle, they don't want to have protests against racism. And the state said that they should be having protests. No, then I hate states' rights, because at the end of the day, what's the one thing that unifies your message? Racism, that's what unifies it. You never believed in states' rights, never, not for 1 second. All you believed in was, I just want to keep other people down so I can have a false sense of confidence about myself. By the way, that moron Donald Trump actually took all 62,000 law enforcement officers at the federal level away, you'd have no Border Patrol and you'd also have no Secret Service left. That's an interesting
proposal. When we come back from the break, we'll talk about a lifelong Republican who's now, just now, regretting her decision to vote for Donald Trump. We'll be right back.
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your active ID more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
Back.
All right, back on the Young Turks, Jake and Anna with you guys. Let's go to our members as usual, tyt.com/join to become a member. Tony Caraballo writes in, I used to work at the Toyota plant that became the Tesla plant in Fremont. I made $29 an hour with full benefits and union protection. When they shut the plant down and Tesla took over, they tried to offer me $17 an hour and no benefits. I told them to kick rocks. Interesting. CJ says, isn't the National Guard, not federal officers, supposed to help within states? Where's the National Guard in all this? Well, so CJ, that's where it becomes an even bigger mess. The National Guard is called in by the governors, and they report to the states in a sense. So now the president can use the National Guard in some unusual circumstances. But the bottom line is, if the National Guard came in, they would be against the federal officers, and they would be on the side of the police chief, but against the police union. And imagine all of them pulling guns on one another. This is Donald Trump's America. Total incoherent, incompetent mess. Okay, Furiosa writes in something very similar to what I said. Isn't this the scenario that gun-toting conservatives have been dreaming about to rise up against? Where the hell are they? Oh, crying about mass figures. That's right. Government tyranny is here, and they couldn't be happier. So there's so many more here, but I've got to read you one really powerful one in a second. So 00083 on YouTube Super Chat says, Jenk Anna, yes, no leadership, but we also have people that believe that 2 + 2 = a frog. So many of these people are in love of their own ignorance, and how's that working out for them now? Not good, but it's not working out for any of us, as somebody's about to explain in a second. But climate change is coming, writes in, how will we unseat a Democratic incumbent, either Biden or his VP in 2024? Stay tuned. On my Facebook page after the show today, after all the shows, I'm going to have an interesting secret that I want to share with you guys. So go to my Facebook page and I'll tell you about that secret. And that's related to your question. Okay, and last one here is very powerful. Princess Luna wrote in on YouTube Super Chat. My grandpa just died alone in a hospital in Florida. It's heartbreaking. His wife of 66 years and my dad, his son, couldn't be there with him. I love everyone at TYT. What you do is so important and I thank you for it. Well, we thank you for sharing that story with us and for sharing a piece of your life with us. Look, I'm humbled by you guys every single day. The fact that you come and watch and spend time with us, spend a portion of your life, that you believe in us. And you know, I'm going to say something a little weird here because I just thought that other media also did what we did. And I just assumed it was when I wasn't watching cable news or the articles I wasn't reading in New York Times, et cetera. And recently I've come to realize, no, we're a little unique. And if you can be a little unique. And that sounds like it's self-aggrandizing or a compliment to us. But what I'm telling you is I'm so disappointed in the rest of the media. They're honestly oftentimes doing it. Terrible job. And I hope that our success one day can lead them to rethinking how they do the news and actually serve their audience. Anyway, we love you guys. Thank you for sharing. All right, Anna, what's next?
All right. Well, an Oklahoma teacher who voted for Donald Trump in 2016 is now regretting her decision. And it's based on his handling of coronavirus and his urging for schools to reopen. Nancy Shively is terrified at the thought of having to go back to school and teach. She's a special ed teacher. And she wrote an opinion piece in USA Today about this, saying, quote, "I fear that with that vote, I may have signed my own death warrant." Let me give you a few more excerpts from what she writes. She says, "I'm a special education teacher and lifelong Republican who reluctantly voted for Donald Trump in 2016 as the less bad of two bad choices. When the pandemic hit, the incompetence of the man for whom I voted and the complicity of everyone around him forced me to admit that I could no longer maintain any kind of self-respect as a Republican. So even though I had voted Republican in every presidential election since 1976, I changed my voter registration to independent and I will be voting for Joe Biden in November." And she, you know, gives some specific details about her experience as a teacher, her profession. And I think that what she writes here is important because it shows that there really is a disconnect between the information voters are receiving from the media, really, and what these two parties represent. So you'll get what I'm talking about once I read this. She says, "I live and teach in a small Oklahoma town. It's not far from the site of President Trump's Tulsa campaign rally on June 20th. That appears, as common sense would have predicted, to be a super spreader event. About 2 weeks after the rally, Tulsa County reported a record high number of cases. I am over 60 with two autoimmune diseases. This outbreak has me worried as it is. Now, with the prospect of schools reopening in a few short weeks, I am terrified. Our country has long devalued and underpaid teachers, refusing to adequately fund the public schools that support our democracy. At the same time, teachers routinely have to use their own money to buy classroom supplies." So I would argue that, you know, anyone who's looked into how public schools have been defunded in this country and how taxpayer money has been funneled away from public schools and into private schools in many of these red states, someone like, you know, Nancy should have been aware that the Republican Party has been pushing for that. That, you know, public education has been dismantled because of the very party she had been voting for since 1976. So look, she's a special ed teacher. She has a full plate, and it's unfortunate that, you know, the media that many people do consume just doesn't give Americans the information they need to make the right choices for themselves and for the country.
Yeah, so first I want to distinguish between Republican politicians and Republican voters. So Republican politicians are perfectly aware of who Donald Trump is and how incompetent he is, how he's bungled coronavirus, how malicious he is, and they signed up for it 100%. So I'm not interested in any of their late conversions, okay? And they're all full of crap. And as the election gets closer and the polls get worse for them, all of a sudden they find disagreement with Donald Trump. Total, utter liars, cheesy, horrible politicians. Now, for Republican voters, I'm happy to have them see the light and convert. And so, look, here's one thing we underestimate. So I it's not like I'm soft on Republican voters. I'm one of the very few people in media who've criticized them enthusiastically at times for leading towards, you know, a guy who's more and more racist and a party that's more and more racist. So I'm not absolving all Republican voters, not by a long shot. I'd be the last person to do that. But if you really were culturally Republican, and that's a real thing, you know, in big parts of this country, there's almost no one who's a Democrat. And so it's frowned upon so much that you get nonstop basically programming saying Democrats are bad, Republicans are good, and it's a cultural thing and it's an identity thing. So if you have finally gotten past that identity issue and those cultural issues to say, no, I can see it now. 2 + 2, it does equal 4, and this does endanger my life, I'm out. Well, I love that, and that's fantastic. The last distinction is people who recognize it in time and then people who don't. The easy one is politics, right? Don't tell me a couple of years from now that you voted for Trump twice, but then realize it was a mistake in the year 2024. I'm not interested in that mistake. Total nonsense, okay? But if you realize it now and you actively go in the other direction, wonderful. Look, that leads me to the 30-year-old in Texas who went to a COVID party and said, as he was dying, and he did die, I think I made a mistake. I thought it was a hoax. So it's not a hoax. Don't wait till it's too late. Whether it's politics, but much more importantly, on this issue, on healthcare, on your life, don't mess around. Listen to scientists and doctors, not politicians.
All right, let's fit in one more story before we have to end this hour. So Maryland's Republican governor, Larry Hogan, claims that a couple of Trump's cabinet secretaries, current cabinet secretaries, have actually asked him to challenge Trump in the Republican primary for the 2020 election. Of course, he decided against doing it, but here he is on Bloomberg TV explaining these interactions.
How many and which members of the president's cabinet told you to consider running against him?
Well, there were only a couple, but I'm not going to reveal the names because they were private conversations, and I certainly wouldn't want to see a couple of friends be fired from the administration. The only reason I shared it in the book was because it is somewhat of a stunning revelation, and it was just one small thing to mention in the book. It was certainly not a main focus of anything we were talking about. I didn't have any kind of a serious effort to try to run for president, but a lot of people were encouraging me.
Well, what was the primary motivation behind their wanting you to run? Was it that he would lose the election, competence concerns, or fear of the direction that he's taking the country in?
Well, again, I don't want to share too much about personal conversations, but I think it was a little bit about concerns about, losing the election and about, whether or not, we were going to, was he going to, the bottom going to drop out of this thing? And what was the alternative? And could we find someone that would perhaps be able to put together a winning coalition in the fall?
So again, I just want to reiterate that two cabinet secretaries who currently work for Donald Trump or work within the Trump administration had this conversation with Larry Hogan, which gives you an idea of how little faith these individuals really have in Donald Trump. And I also want to talk a little bit about what Hogan shares in his new book, Still Standing. He said that he had conversations about the possibility and even thought about what nickname Trump would likely give him if he chose to run. And so he says, I assumed he would go with Fat Larry, an obvious choice, as I had admittedly put on some weight since my cancer battle, or maybe Cancer Boy. That would be a good one, but it didn't happen. It wouldn't be a good one. Like, it's incredible how everyone knows the type of person Donald Trump is. And it's like, yeah, I wonder what kind of nickname he'd give me. Maybe Cancer Boy. Like, that's a normal thing to do. I mean, it's unbelievable. Wow.
Yeah, two different issues here. First of all, people in the White House that are still working for Donald Trump, full well knowing what an incompetent monster he is, are the worst people on earth. You're doing whisper campaigns to other Republicans. Meanwhile, you're telling the American people, oh my God, Donald Trump's such a wonderful leader. I think you should jump off a cliff with him. You monsters, you're just as guilty as Donald Trump. On Larry Hogan, he's obviously running for president in 2024. That's what all of this is about. Oh, I don't want to talk too much about it. That's why I wrote a book. Yeah, dude, I get it. You're running for president. People encouraged me to run for president in 2020 because everybody wants me to be the president. But fine, I'll wait till 2024. Look, Larry Hogan has done a pretty decent job as governor of Maryland during coronavirus. And I say that as a person who opposes reelection. But don't give me this political crap while pretending not to be political. Okay, we got a great post game coming up for you guys. AOC versus Yoho, round 2 and 3. Wall Street Journal comes out against cancel culture. Are they right or wrong? TYT.com/join. Join button below on YouTube. See you there.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.